Good morning. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy. We meet at our headquarters, 1625 West Jefferson in Phoenix, Arizona. Today's date, I believe, is Thursday, December 13, 2018. At the moment, we have four board members present. We're expecting the fifth board member to join us shortly. The four board members are present at this particular moment. Mr. B, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, and my name is C.T. Wright. Today, we will be doing all our work. We'll be non-institutional. We'll be done right here in our office. And we will basically today be doing phase one commutation hearings as well as one absolute discharge, I believe. And that will be our work for today. We have a very large stack of, I believe we have about 17, if I remember my count correct, about 17 phase ones scheduled for today, which we will move forward. I think that just for the record, as we all recall, beginning July of this year, that those who will be coming for phase one hearings would not be participating. They will be able to listen, and we do have written statements from some who have provided the board with support or some victims. But I think that with the new policy that was established, I believe on July 1 of this year, I just want us to be aware of that. We'll begin very shortly, and I'm going to make a chair decision, and so that we can all be together. I think I asked Gene, do you want to come up first, sir, so that we can get you, since you're here, and then we will start with our phase one. So please come up first, sir, and if I can get you to state your name for the record, sir.
My name is Gene Anthony.
The Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy, and as I stated before, you have made a request to the board to be considered for an absolute discharge this morning. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
That's right. I didn't get the machine on.
Okay. So we got to start over. The machine was not, and so now we have all five board members present. So it was good you can have the machine working, so we'll start over. And the board member who's joining us now is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. So I need to start over because the recorder was not working at that particular moment. So again, would you state your name and ABC number for the record if you remember your ABC number, sir?
My name is Gene Anthony Keggy, 88191.
Mr. Kelly, welcome again to the Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy, and I've indicated that you submitted a request to the board, requesting the board to consider you for absolute discharge. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
And since you are already out, and how's the life been serving you since you have been out here in the land of the free and brave, sir?
It's been challenging, you know, adapting to the changes that have occurred over the last 25 plus years while I was locked up. But I believe I'm doing really good. I, you know, learn computers, learn how to work with the technology that passed me by while, you know, I was incarcerated. I've been working the same job sites I've been out. Me and my wife, you know, just plugging along, living everyday life.
Okay. So how long have you been married, sir?
5 years now.
Okay, well, congratulations. Now, when were you placed on parole, sir?
I was released on July 5th of 2016.
2016,
sir.
Okay. And so you were on general parole at that time, sir?
Yes, sir.
So you never been on, you never been on home arrest?
No, I was not released on an ankle brace at that
time. Okay, sir.
When I was released, you were the only member that was still on the board from that time.
Yes, sir. I do remember. That's why I remember your face when I saw you this morning coming in, sir. What we're trying to do, we're trying to get to know what you've been doing and how life is serving you so that the board can make an informed decision whether to grant you absolute discharge or not. So I want to start off with just a few questions, general questions, and then other board members will be asking questions. Why have you made this decision at this time to request the board to consider you for absolute discharge, sir?
Because I feel that due to the circumstances that, you know, I've proven myself. I've been on parole for two years and 5 months, not one blemish. I paid all my fees. I UA every month. I've been clean UA every month since I've been out. I've been working the same job. I got out 2 weeks after I was out, I got a job at Waste Management. Then 5 weeks later, I went to another place where I'm currently employed. I moved up the ranks at my employment, went from working in the warehouse to now I am the warranty rep for the company. The company I work for is Tough Spas. We have about 70 employees. We sell spas across the United States. We sell them in Europe, Canada, everywhere. And I went in there and I basically was working in circles. You know, I can pat myself on the back around 18-year-old kids who, you know, just don't know, you know, the work ethic. And I impressed my bosses and everyone, and they, you know, pulled me into the office, say, we want you to be part of the family, we want you to grow and make a career of this. And,
so exactly what do you do? How do you do that with those spas, sir?
Say that again?
I said, exactly what do you do?
Well, when I was in the warehouse, I did a 20-point test, filled them up with water, made sure everything was running, all the electronics, the plumbing, you know, make sure they weren't leaking before we move them on to the next department so they can send them. So I was responsible for making sure, you know, that they were all sound and, you know, and were ready to be shipped out, you know. And from that, I went on to plumbing, and then, you know, 2.5 months ago, they pulled me into the office. They said, you know what, we have an opportunity, and you are our guy. You've been our guy from, you know, they approached me a year ago and said, hey, our next lead position, you're the one we want. You know, you've shown to us, you know, and they're, you know, I did submit a letter from my employer.
Yes, sir.
I've seen that. So since I've been out, I've been, you know, I did all the programming I was supposed to do. I am very involved in our church. Me and my wife go to Vineyard. I serve every Monday night. We go to the food bank. Our church has its own food bank at the church. I interview guests and do the paperwork as they come in, so then they can come get clothing and food. There's a system that goes there. My wife's been doing that. There's a couple of guys at work who are struggling with substance abuse issues. I once had that problem. I did a lot of mentoring in the prison. I did a lot of programming in prison. And since I've been out, I also mentor and sponsor two guys through the AA program who, you know, are struggling with, you know, dealing with their substance abuse issues. I just, part of the program, I don't know if any of the members are familiar with it, is there's a saying that, you know, you've got to give what you've been given, you know. And I've been clean and sober 11 years now, and I just want to give back what I've been given, helping people.
So you aren't doing the AA or
yeah.
NA? So
yeah, that's just voluntary. There's nothing that's...
So you're continuing that on the outside, sir?
That's nothing that's, you know, that my parole conditions are. That's just me on my own, you know, staying involved in something like that.
But if you get absolute discharge, then that would not be one of the conditions. Are you going to continue with NA or AA for a long period of time, sir?
I will be involved with that for probably the rest of my life, and, you know, as long as I can help someone, you know. I feel the need to give back. You know, I've been given,
we
another chance.
We look at everything that we see, and I do take notes where I believe that you did have one diluted UA, and that was
yes.
Back in November 5th of this year. So
yeah.
What happened on November the 5th of this year, sir?
Just drank too much water before. I went back the very next day and gave him a clean UA. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what my pro officer said. He said that, you know, it'd be an issue if I went back and was diluted again or if it was dirty. It's just one of those things where I just got off of work, was drinking water. You know, if you drink too much water, it's going to be diluted.
And I believe that's the only diluted UA that you had since 2016.
Yeah,
am I correct, sir?
I already went this month too.
And you've had no positives since you've been out, sir?
No positives, not one issue. I haven't even had any. One contact with law enforcement I had is when I was T-boned by another driver, and I ended up in the hospital. And there was a police report. Other than that, I have not one single contact with law enforcement.
Okay, well, we're glad to hear that. Now, in view of the fact, you know, about the nature of the crime that you have committed, that you completed your time on, have you had any problems at all whatsoever in dealing with individuals who might feel uncomfortable in being around you, sir, due to the nature of the crime itself, and you're of first degree?
No, most people, once they get to know me, you know the circumstances of the case, because I'm open with everybody, and as I don't know how familiar the other members are with my case, so I know you are, sir. I gave someone a ride to do a burglary, and I dropped him off and I left. I wasn't there. It's a felony murder. You know, during the course of the felony, sadly, you know, Ms. Bursing lost her life. And I explained to people, you know, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have offered to give him a ride, whether I believed he was going to do a burglary or not. I made that mistake. I shouldn't have done that. But, at this, you know, I wasn't the actual perpetrator of the homicide, you know.
I remember you dropping him off, and so... Just for my colleagues, so I remember it quite well, you know, having been here in 2016. Are you telling my colleagues that you were not there when the murder was committed? You just picked someone up? What were the circumstances of you picking this individual up, sir?
We were out drinking and smoking marijuana. We were at a bar and we went to someone else's house. We continued drinking and smoking marijuana. He mentioned, hey, I want to, you know, let's go down, I want to do a burger, I want to get some money. I'm like, whatever, yeah, I'll give you a ride. You know, and I shouldn't have. I went, dropped him off on the corner, went back to where we were recently at drinking and partying, and I crashed out. I didn't see him again until 2 days later. All the records show that's, you know, exactly what, you know, happened that night. You know.
And how did law enforcement find you, identify you as being one that was involved, sir?
I had told my brother what had happened. I went to my brother's home, and he told me about how this woman down the road had been murdered, and he told me the night, and I said, huh, it's weird. I dropped Trevor off on the corner that night. He said something about doing a burglary. I didn't know if he was going to do it. I didn't care if he was. I didn't, you know, didn't believe him, didn't, you know, I was just getting rid of him. So he talked to someone who was the neighbor of the victim. Officers called me at work and they asked me, said, yeah, I'm willing to come down. I went down willfully, and my statement is what convicted me. My honesty of telling me I gave him a ride. We talked about doing a burglary, I dropped him off, and I left. And that's the only thing that was the evidence in my case, is my own admittance of telling on myself and my co-defendant, Trevor White.
Do you know what happened to your co-defendant, sir?
I believe he's not ever going to get out. I believe he got natural life.
Okay. And aside from your wife, do you have any other relatives or supporters in the state of Arizona, sir?
Yes, sir. I don't know if you remember from my first hearing, I had quite a bit of family here. They all couldn't get off work. I have two daughters, a daughter-in-law here in Glendale, my grandson, I have little grandkids, I have my family down in Tucson, my mom, my brothers. I do have a big support, you know, group here.
Do you have some questions, you know, we talked about before, but just for the record, do you have a close relationship with your family at this time?
Yes, I go down to Tucson here more recently, because my mother is not doing very well, but I usually go at least every 3 weeks. Now I'm trying to get down there a little bit more. She was just in the hospital, and she's not doing well. She's on, you know, been on oxygen for the last 4 years. She has one lung, and she was just in there again, and they might have to cut on the other lung. So I get down there, and then they get down there more.
In the murder that you... Well, was charged with, that was in, you was charged what, in 1996?
No, that was 90. It happened in 90, and I was convicted in 91.
Okay. Well, I do take note, you know, that initially you were not the best initially. You did improve over time. You know, you were part of STG and all of that. So how did you improve over period of time while you were incarcerated, sir? What's your recollection, sir?
My recollection is I finally pulled my head out of my butt and said I need to change. To be blunt, you know, like I said, I got 11 years clean now, so obviously I was still, you know, messing around in prison, doing things I shouldn't be doing. And I said, you know what, I don't want to continue living this way, I need to change. And that's when I started programming heavily, and I knew there was going to be a chance one day, because I start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then, you know, maybe I can get parole. Maybe I won't die in here. And, you know, then I met my wife and that.
How did you meet your wife? You said y'all been together now 5 years, been married for 5 years.
Ironically, a guy that I was teaching in the meth program, I was a mentor. I had taken the program. It's a 6-month intensive program that was down there in Tucson. Then after that, I went on to be a mentor in that program. And the guy that was in my group, and he also became a mentor, he was riding with his now my stepdaughter. She was in therapy at the time, and he told me, hey, he was kept on talking about how wonderful her mom was. And I'm like, hey, why don't you introduce me to her? Long story short, we started writing. We wrote for almost a year and a half, phone calls, I mean, letters every day from her, and we hit it off. And yeah, it was because of, you know, being in that program and being a mentor in that program and being around, you know, someone else in that program, that's how I met my wife.
And so,
in 2013, we were married.
Okay. Well, congratulations. And, so, you enjoyed marriage, sir? You've been able to adjust? I mean, because when you initially married, you were still incarcerated.
Yes.
And
so,
after you got out, so have you been able to adjust to your...
Yeah, we're adjusting. I mean, she had her life by herself for a while, and I had mine. And it kind of, you know, it's taken a while to, you know, get back to work, but it's working. You know, for so long, I, you know, didn't have to answer to anyone per se, and then she didn't have to answer to anyone per se. Now we got to, you know, answer to each other, and you know, things in the household and all that good stuff.
Okay. So I think you've already told me, but just for my recollection, so what are your plans in the long term? Let's say 2 years from now, do you still plan to be there with the spa company, or do you have other plans, sir?
I do want to try and maybe get back into school. I've always wanted to become a LISAC, you know, a licensed, you know, substance abuse counselor. That was part of my plan from coming out, and life kind of gets in the way. I got a job, there's bills to pay, and trying to go to school, you know, when me and my wife are probably set to a place where maybe I can do a part-time job and maybe get back to school. That's something that I would like to do eventually one day if I can find the time and the means to do so.
You're quite active in the church, so exactly what do we do at that church, sir?
Like I said, I work at the food bank and any other volunteer stuff we can do there. That's every Monday. The process is people come in and we sign them in, and then we take them in the back, interview them, ask them if they're, you know, anything we can help them with, pray with them, and then move them on to the next spot where they get clothing and food. You know, so that's something that we're heavily involved in. I haven't been there for a while, but I was doing Thursday nights, another program over there called Living Free, which was a like a 12-step type program, but it wasn't AA. And I was involved in that, and just with my hours changing at work, it kind of, I had to free up time somewhere else to be involved in that.
Okay, well, I'm going to yield to other board members. As you stated earlier, you know, back in 2016, we had a chance to talk to each other and to be a part of your being released out on parole, whereas my colleagues were. Did not have that opportunity, therefore I'm going to see if any of my colleagues have any questions. The Honorable Mr. Rui Kamanis.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Good morning.
Good morning.
As Dr. Wright just stated, I wasn't here for your parole hearing. I do want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
For your success since you've been in the community. I just had a few questions. And before I start, first of all, thank you for being so detailed. I think you provided a lot of information today that would have filled in a lot of holes for questions I might have asked, but you covered them. The only question I have was, what was your lifestyle leading up to this event? And I'm not trying to conjoin it. I noticed that you had some juvenile issues and a little bit of interaction with the criminal justice system leading up to this. So what was going on in your life at that time?
And it's no excuse. I started at a young age, probably 13 years old, drinking and smoking weed. And it just escalated from there. When I was 15, my parents divorced. And there was just really no guidance, and at that point, I could do what I want, and I chose the wrong decisions. My father was an alcoholic, so I grew up in a home with an alcoholic. And I, just like I said, there was no guidance, and I chose the wrong directions, up until that point. And to that point when that happened, I was working, I had two vehicles. All the stuff I had done as a juvenile, I kind of got away from, but I was still partying and drinking. I was trying to stay away from, even being involved in selling drugs. I got a job and I was, trying to get right, but I was seesawing on the fence.
And what was that job, sir?
I was a lead cook at a resort, a Voyager RV resort down in Tucson.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir. I have no further questions.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Paranis. Honorable board members, Honorable Mr. Neal, any questions? Mm-hmm. Honorable Ms. Greenhouse?
And Mr. Greenhouse asking my question, so thank you.
Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So, sir, tell me out of that experience, because you did a long time in prison, and all records indicate that you did pick someone up, drop them off, they committed a burglary, you came back and picked them up. So what does that, or what type of advice would you give? You say that you counsel young adults now. So what kind of advice would you tell them about?
Well, it goes to the old saying that our parents have told me, and I'm sure even generations turn to watch who you hang out with. And just that easy. You think, I never thought in a million years that by giving them a ride, I didn't know nothing about like the felony murder law, but guilt by association. You choose to hang out with the wrong people doing the wrong things, and just like that, your life's over. Because for me, my life was over at that point. Because when you're sentenced to 25 life, you think your life's over. And like that, choosing to hang out with the wrong people, were bad decisions. And then one night, I never million years thought by giving someone a ride and dropping off on the corner, I'd do 25 years in prison. And when other people hear that, they're like, they don't believe it. And I said, yeah, it's there's a thing called felony murder law. If you're engaging in criminal activity and someone dies during that criminal activity, everyone involved can go down for murder. And it's that simple. You think you're just gonna go do something simple, and an off-duty officer, draws down on someone and shoots them, and you're doing something you thought was just a petty crime, and someone dies in that, and you're going down for murder. You just got to choose to not hang around, watching you hang out around with, because it's that easy on the case, No, I wasn't living the cleanest life, and, I made some bad decisions, and I don't think I would have, it would have happened to me if that night never happened. Maybe I would have gotten better. Maybe I would have done something else. I don't know. I do know what did happen. And that led me to where I am today in my life.
So I was kind of impressed. You have a niece, Tiffany.
Yes, ma'am.
She wrote,
yes, sir. My bad.
Like you now, huh?
When you said her, you mentioned...
No, I was only saying that because many times we were talking to inmates and they referred to her as sir or mister. Yeah. So that's
what I called sir a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, that's so, my niece Tiffany.
So, your niece Tiffany is indicating in her letter that you've been out for 2 years and it didn't seem to normal people 2 years is not a long time. But to someone like yourself who's been incarcerated for a long period of time, that 2 years is a very long, long time.
2 years is pretty much the exact.
So how do you feel about that? You've been out 2 years, and that was the first time someone elaborated it in that fashion to make me think that.
And sometimes it seems, there's moments, sometimes it seems like yesterday, and sometimes it feels like forever. And I've, you know, told my wife and other people this, you know, like, I'd be at work at sometimes, and even going back 6 months ago, I'd step out of the warehouse and look up and see, and I seen a falcon flying over, and I start crying, because I'm free. I'm like, I really am free. And still have them moments that it's hard to explain, the things we take for granted.
So she also indicated that she must be very proud of you, because she said that when you first got out, you always worked, but you rode your bike to work.
Well, at first, I had to come back, I don't know if you remember, I had to come back to the board after I was out and get permission to drive. Mm-hmm. So for a minute there, I rode my bike to work. I did what I had to do, you know, and I still have that bike. It's sitting there. I get on it every once in a while, but it also reminds me that you do what you got to do, you know.
So how long did you ride the bike?
I believe it was like maybe 4 months until after, you know, from the time I got out that way. Because then I had a hearing and I had to get, like I said, permission to drive. That was one of my conditions outside of other people's regular. It was a special stipulation for me that I couldn't drive, you know. And I also had to pay off some old tickets from 1990. No one driving without insurance, and I had to pay them off. But even though I didn't have any tickets, I still had to wait until the board gave me permission to drive.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you so very much. Any further questions at this time? We'll give you an opportunity before the end of the hearing to make further comments and questions. Board members, any further questions at this time, board members? I hear none at this time. I do take note that I believe that the business is here, so is she planning to speak or she's just here to observe?
No, she would like to speak. And then one more thing, I don't know if I can hand this to you, a last-minute letter from someone else that I...
Yes, sir, you can hand it to us, but we will not return it. But yes, right. Sir, it will be a part of your file from this point forward, sir.
It's someone else that I do that is a team leader at my church that he said, man, I want to write a letter for you. And I'm like, it might be too late. I was supposed to send these ahead of time. And he said, look, I'll just download it and give it to him, and maybe... I said, okay. Thank you.
Okay, so, Mrs. Here, you can just sit up here, sir. You don't have to go back now. You just sit up here. So, now maybe we just get your name for the record, ma'am.
My name is Danny Keggy. I am Jean's wife.
And what do you want to tell the board this morning?
Just that Jean has worked very hard to get where he's at. And, he doesn't do himself justice when he stands up here before you. He mentors anybody that comes across his path. We have an 18-year-old girl at the food bank who looks up to him like a stepdad because he reaches out to her and he loves on her. People that come through the food bank, they connect with him because they have been where he was and they continue living that life. And when he talks to them, something in their head goes off and they're like, oh yeah, I can do that too. So he changes lives every time he walks into that food bank. And he has just done a 360 from where he started to where he's at now. So I would just ask you to please take that next step and allow him to be really free.
So how's the marriage going, ma'am?
It's like anybody's marriage with a little twist. I mean, there's ups, there's downs. Yes, we go to therapy just to keep us online. And so that if issues come up that are going to be, of course, different from other folks, then she's there to mentor us. She's actually a pastor at a church outside of our church because we want to keep it kind of segregated. And we're still here together. And I don't foresee anything coming between us.
And you told us how the two of you met. Have you had any regrets that you came together at that particular time? And
do I have to answer that question?
Yes, ma'am. Because he was incarcerated. You have to remember he was incarcerated when they all got together.
You're right. And there have been times where I would sit and I would think, okay, do you really know what you're doing? Thank you. And yes, I do. He is the most amazing person I've ever met in my life. Is he perfect? No. No, he's not. But his experiences have made him who he is, and I love the person he's become.
Forgive me for asking, you know, some question, but are you perfect? You said he was not.
Absolutely not. That's why we're broken together.
That's me. Board members, any questions for the business? I don't see the questions from board members, so you may go back and have a seat, and thank you so very much. And sir, you can stay up here. Well, let me ask this. Is there anyone else to speak on behalf of any supporters in the room? Any victims in the room? I don't see any in the room who wishes to speak at this time. Before we come to the end of your hearing, sir, I want to just ask this on a serious note. Why are you requesting this? Exactly the real reasons why you're requesting absolute discharge at this time, sir.
So that I can, like my wife said, just totally be free of any constraints. You know, there's been, it's difficult trying to get another place to live. We've been in the same place since I got out. You know, even though a lot of places, they don't go back 7-10 years when you try to rent, but being on parole, we're also asked to go and talk to that person and say, hey, you do know this man is on parole. Are you allowing him to live here? And then we've called places, and I told them, hey, I got a 25-year-old. Oh, it's no big deal. It was for murder. Oh, let me put you on hold. Yeah, sorry, you can't live here. You know, so it's little things like that. I've had opportunities, even with my company, to do some deliveries out of state, and you're on a whim. I can't leave the state unless I get permission from my parole officer. So opportunities to make more money have, you know, but that's, you know, part of my parole. That's something that I have to deal with. And just things like that. I just want to, you know, like I said, just to finally be free. You know, I just want to be a free man. And it's, you being on parole is, it's like you've got this weight still on me. Even though I'm free, you still have that weight. You still have that in the back of your head that, you know, if accidentally something goes wrong, I could be thrown back in there and you can never let me out again. It's not like someone else who's on parole who has an end date. I don't have an end date. And I want maybe today to be my end date.
And what would that do for you? I mean, I know that you have what you refer to as your freedom, but what exactly would that mean to you as an individual, sir? What would it mean to you to
that I've paid my debt to society and that I can move on with my life completely? That's all I want to do, is move on with my life.
And your parole officer, who is not present today, I don't believe, but has he ever given you permission to leave the state? You say you had the opportunity to drive that vehicle out of state on the job, but has he ever given you permission to leave the state?
Yes, last January I went back to, well, I didn't go back to, because I'd never been there. I went to Staten Island, where I have family members I've never met before in my life, and I met cousins and aunts and uncles. I guess you got to set it up weeks in advance, you know, but I went back there and, you know, seen my aunts, and I mean, I have a whole side of my family that I never met, and I got to go spend like 5 days in New York, and I went and seen the Rockettes Christmas special at, you know, Radio City Music Hall, and just things that I never thought I'd be able to do in my life, because, you know, 10 years removed from that, I sat in prison thinking I may never get out. And earlier, even before that, I said I had thought that maybe I would die in here. You know, so it's, you know, just, yeah, it was amazing.
You know, it's always, and I speak only for myself, we, as you know, we board members, we act independent of each other. You know, I'm always a little skeptical when we talk about absolute discharges or pardons, and because not only you represent yourself and your family, but from my perspective, you also represent the board, and I just want to make sure that you're really ready for absolute discharge. You've only been out, what, now 2 years or so, as your niece indicated, and a lot of that Mr. Johnson quoted from. I'm just wondering if you've been out long enough to really, I know that you're still a young man, you're just 47 years of age, you've done quite well since being out, extremely well out of state based on what we know of you. So I'm just trying to make sure before this board votes that we, if this board sees fit to move towards absolute discharge. This is because, you know, we have, as you know, we have former inmates who come before this board, and as soon as they get out, they start meeting, you know, creating other problems. That's an embarrassment for the board and for the state of Arizona and for all of us. And I just want to make sure that you really give them a real thought to this board. I was just taking note because my memory was not that good. I take note that I voted for you twice to be released. I was just looking at the notes while sitting here. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you're going to do. Are you going to create an embarrassing situation if this board sees fit to let you out, sir?
Well, Mr. Wright, I haven't let you down yet. I don't plan on it.
We're never going to see you in arms again if this board decides to.
Exactly. I do not want to go back to that place since it is a complete insane asylum what has become of Department of Corrections from when I first went into what it is now. It's disgusting. That's all. You know, I don't want to go into detail of the things that are going on in there. I do not want to go back there.
Well, before we come to an end, I want to see if other board members might have some final questions that they would like to ask at this time. I don't see any questions at this time, so we are coming towards the end of your hearing. This is your hearing. We're going to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board without repeating yourself. Anything else you want to tell the board at this time, sir, before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination, sir?
You know, at this time, I'm going to say I'm going to say
hi. Thank you, sir. Please just have a seat.
And I thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, the board is going into discussion. As we all know that in the state of Arizona, where we operate under the open meeting laws, everybody can hear what we say. This is the first time that we is constituted today, the board is constituted today, that we have had an opportunity to hold this type hearing and this is for absolute discharge. I just want to go back and say that. So we're going to begin our discussion. We're going to ask that Ms. Sanders, if we're talking to you or to anyone else, we're not. We're just talking among ourselves now. The five of us just talking to ourselves before taking a vote. And once the vote is taken, then we will move from there. As chairman of the board, I'm going to reserve my right to be the last to comment because I'm the chairman of the board, and I've had at least two occasions to have the opportunity of speaking with this gentleman and voting as it relates to this situation. So board members, who would like to begin the discussion at this time? Okay, the Honorable Mr. Kowalis.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Wright. I'll keep it short. We certainly gathered a lot of information today in this absolute discharge hearing. I just want to say, I think something that weighed heavy with me is that he did not give a detailed final statement. I think he felt very confident in his standing at this point. And I am comfortable with considering absolute discharge. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. We listened to a lot of people making presentations in this event's board. And throughout my life, I listened to a lot of people making presentations about different things. And after a while, I'm trying to get a feel for when people are presenting those things, whether they're genuine in their presentation. And I did not get the feeling of a prepared and show type statement that we get from a lot of people. I felt that things quite genuinely were the same. And with his entire record and what he's accomplished since he's been out and maintaining sanity here and marriage that has started under some unusual circumstances, I think I would be comfortable at this time with an absolute discharge. Thank you, Dr. Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Honorable Mrs. Woodhouse.
Thank you, sir. My initial reaction when I looked at this packet was that he's only been on parole for 2 years, and I just went, no way. I just thought that's just not long enough. And, you know, looking back at the criminal history, you know, there was kind of getting involved in the participation in prison, the, I don't know how many majors, 12 majors, 7 majors, I guess, while he was in prison. And I thought, wow, this is, today, meeting him today will be the, you know, what's going to tell. But, I mean, just meeting him and hearing about what he's doing now, the only thing I still, you know, I want to make sure we consider is that if there was to be any future law enforcement contact, it would be very serious consequence to this board because the crime was murder. But we also have to consider, of course, we will consider that. The public would not consider that when they say they let a murderer out. But when we consider his involvement in the crime, which is what he described, just drop the guy off, it sounds quite less significant to me. So, you know, based on everything he's doing now and how well he's done since he's been out, I could be open to absolute discharge as well.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Dr. I have to agree. And looking back at his criminal history, he really had, as a juvenile, no violent crimes. He did have one incident in 1984 that he was found not guilty of as a juvenile, where they were supposed to him and somebody else assaulted somebody, but he was found not guilty of that. And then as an adult, he didn't have any violent crimes in the time that he was incarcerated in prison, according to the Ames report, although he did have some felonies. I went back through there and I didn't see any violent crimes that was in there that he had been involved in. As I know, you know, every case is very unique. I think that his case is very unique because he hasn't had a violent crime tendency that's been out there. He admitted he was a drug addict. He was on drugs, and that's what he did, and continued to use drugs while he was there. I think this case is unique. It is definitely a case where he had no involvement in the actual murder itself. He didn't enter into the victim's home, according to the information that I see. He had a conversation with a gentleman that talked about doing the burglary, and the co-defendant told him he knew a place where he could go and burglarize a house and get some things out of it, and he said okay, and he took the guy there to the trailer, dropped him off, and came back and picked him up, and that was the major nature of his involvement in that actual murder. And, you know, I think that he was honest at the time that he was arrested. I think he had integrity at the time that he was arrested, and I think he's sincere and honest in his presentation to us, because one statement he did make is really true. Had he not told the police that he dropped this guy off and gave him the information, they would not have probably, they may not have probably solved that crime. And had he not told them and integrity and had remorse for what he had done at the time that it was actually, the crime was actually committed, I think that, you know, he probably wouldn't be here with us, in front of us today. But I think he has remorse. I think he's not going to be a threat, and that he has not shown any history of violent behavior, and I think he, you know, has truly learned the meaning and understanding, as he explained, be careful who you hang out with, who you associate with, because something simple could turn into something major, and that's the situation. So I would be supportive based on his past and his history of him being given an absolute discharge. But like I say, usually, you know, 2 years is not long enough, but looking at all the other factors that go along with it, I would be supportive.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. I should be very brief. I think that, like my colleagues initially, although I'd seen him twice before, I was reluctant, you know, after just 2 years, because that's not a very long time. But in having heard him, this is my third time listening to him, and I feel that sometimes we have to give an opportunity to for someone to prove themselves out in society. And I think that one of the things that did catch my attention, and unless we read the pre-sentence report and everything else, we tend to forget, we won't, but the public would tend to forget that he did not commit the murder. He dropped someone off, and and I think that that's one reason that this bullet saw fit in 2016 to place him on general parole. And I think that at this time, I'm going to just go ahead and make a motion to see where it goes. And once we see where it goes, then we will go from there. And my motion is going to be as it relates to Mr. Gene, and the last name is spelled C-H-E-C-C-H-I, ADC number 088191. And my motion is going to be to grant absolute discharge. That is my motion.
I'll second.
Agreed.
Motion by C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Ms. Greenhouse, agreed by the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. Neal, and the Honorable Mr. Johnson. Sir, the board has seen fit to grant you absolute discharge. Remember that this will not become official until you get all of the paperwork done with your parole officer before it becomes official. You are going to be representing not only you, your wife, your church,
yes, sir.
Your church, some of us believe in that, your church, but from our perspective, more importantly, the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We're going to be depending on you. We're going to be dependent on you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to be dependent on you.
We
want to thank
you.
Jesus.
Stay safe. I want to thank you.
And we wish you the best with your marriage.
Okay,
just,
thanks, sir.
Since what was 2014, the marriage took place, so we wish you the best. And, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And once again, we never want to see you in arms again.
We'll
be so
disappointed.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we're going to move forward, so I'm going to see if we can get those who